February 21st, we are taping now. When Abraham returns from the last time God talks to him, it says he went to Beersheba. Sarah dies in Hebron. So why wasn't Abraham and Sarah in the same place when she died? If Sarah was in Hebron, at the time of the Akedah, why did Abraham return to Beersheba? So we'll try to answer this question today, maybe next week. But to start with, we have this man who is on a mission. And what we do today is to determine to what extent is Sarah with him on this mission. So what I have to go with is in the Medrash that Rashi quotes, and I'm totally with this program. That Rashi on the Pasuk is HaNefesh Asher Ozsu B'choron. Right, the souls they made in Haran. It's not just that it says HaNefesh Asher Asu, because Rashi gives the pshat. That means it's HaAvodim Shekanu. Right? It's that it's in plural. One would have expected it to say HaNefesh Asher Asa the Haran. The Nefesh that Abraham purchased. At that time in history, a man and a wife do not purchase things together. What Rashi is concentrating on is that a man and a wife are making souls together. Hu megayer et ha-anashim, v'hi megayeret et ha-nashim. That is enough for the Medrash to say, based on that alone, in the plural, that Avram and Sarah were a team. Okay? What kind of husband was Avraham? I'll tell you this. One should not impose upon the conversations of husbands and wives in Sefer Bereishis our supposed modes of communication. Avram and Sarah do not, and in fact, no couples in Bereishis seem to talk with the personal care that we the personal touch that we might render to a husband and wife situation. A man goes to wife and says, "Hurry, mahari, shlosh se'in kemach," right? Lushi va'asiugos. He has to tell you. You have to tell me how to make bread, right? Even the kindest and the most dedicated women today would say, "You make it," you know, right? So, but I'd like to suggest, though, and based on current schemes, other descriptions of husband and wife dialogue at that time, not from the Torah, but from other sources, that the way he talks to Sarah just indicates that she can only have been with him in his mission of Hachnasas Orchim. There's an underlying sense that Sarah is with him. Quick, Sarah, guess what we have today? New guests! How exciting is that? Right? It's not like, right, the Torah probably wouldn't give the woman the response to that. Sarah did respond. The only time we have an actual dialogue with Abram and Sarah is a very strange dialogue of whether she actually laughed or not when she heard not even sure that it's Avram telling her, "Lo ki tzachakt." Some of her should say it's in her own mind. Remember, these are three men. Avram thinks they're men. He doesn't know they're angels, right? Sarah certainly doesn't know they're angels, right? Unless you want to say as in the Via she knew more than Avram, but I don't think Mephor should go there. And it's very much probable, this is the Bechor Shor, that any time people stopped by Avram's tent and were served food, this was probably a common occasion, they would leave the table and say,
"What? 2.5 years.
Next year, Abraham. Not you. You should. You ought to. And I give a bracha that you. Next time, I'm sure you can. This time, next year, you'll have a baby bouncing around the house, right? So that everybody used to leave the house this way. So Sarah is probably just this time she didn't know that it's getting recorded in a chumash for forever that we're going to read 3,000 years from now. She doesn't know that there's going to be anyone bearing her name. She doesn't know her. Okay. All right. So Sarah is listening to this, And her reaction is, yeah, nechtigatav, like everybody else says. But this time, somehow, it seems different. And she's worried that her disbelief is going to ruin this. Right? She's worried, Lokitzah, did I disagree? Right? Okay, but Lamaisa, that's her reaction. I saw in the Perush of Yehuda HaChosid, this is amazing, that the Akedah was because she left. You're going to get close to losing the child because she was worried that by laughing, she was going to lose the, not get this bracha. You don't believe the bracha, you're not getting it. Right? So you don't believe in the Olam Haba, you're not going to get it. This says the Mishnah, the Gemara in the end of Sanhedrin. Look, the woman in the Haftorah also mocks or doesn't take Elisha's bracha right away. Remember, he said next year you'll be hugging a child. Right? So she says, "Don't disappoint me. I've gotten that bracha from plenty of people already." Right? Okay. So let's get back to our point. That Sarah and Avram are traveling. If your husband hears voices in his head that says, it's time to leave Mesopotamia to go down to Canaan, do they know that Canaan is not only a famine zone, but it's also a war zone? Right? Chapter 12 and 13, famine. Chapter 14, war. There's a war going on for, some Mefarshim say 14 years, some Mefarshim say 27 years. In other words, it's the 13 on top, 14 on top of the 13, right? That there's war, there's rebellion, there's revolt, there are four kings against the five kings. This is not a new thing. This has been going on for quite a long time.
But who says it's any different in Mesopotamia?
Okay, all right. But something has gotten into Avram's head that says we have to leave. Did a woman at that time have the right to disagree and say, I'm not going anywhere. Fine, Avram, you go yourself. All right, you know what? Whatever the thing is, Avram says, my job is in Canaan. Our destiny is in Canaan. And of course, the Tanakh doesn't tell us anything about her feelings about this. But what is mashma is that they went twice. Right? They went twice. Well, Chazal say once when Avram was 70, and once when Avram was 75. So this is pretty typical in our time also, where you make aliyah and everything seems to be working, and then what happens, it's not quite working, so you go back, and then you try to drive a taxi in Los Angeles for a little while, make some money, and then you see, okay, I made amassed plenty of money, let's make a go of it again. Going twice may indicate that it didn't quite work the first time. Right? Why do we say that he went twice? Because at the end of Parshas Noach, they're going to Canaan before it says Lech Lecha. So some of Horshim say, all right, the Mefarash is explaining the Satum. But no, I think Chazal are well, there are a lot of ancient source material, very old Midrashim, and even it's in the Pseudepigrapha, it's in the New Testament. Somehow the New Testament manages to put in that Abraham went to Israel twice. I'm just putting it out there. And it's in Midrashim. Okay, that the Bris Ben Hapsarim was when Abraham was 70. Right, that's the extra 30 years between Geria Zaracho. From Yitzchak's birth is 400 years, but from this promise is 430 years. Got it? Okay. So that explains the discrepancy in the amount of time we spent in Egypt, as is described in Sefer Shmos. But how could he be 70 at Bris Ben Hapsarim, which is chapter 15, if chapter 12 says he was 75? Right? So, okay. He went twice. So, it's a struggle. It's not easy. And Sarah's with him. Right? There's that very romantic Rashi that says that when Avram pitches his tent, the word tent is spelled Aleph, Hey, Lamed, Hey. Okay, the drash is darshaned, but I'll tell you this. The word ahalo appears four or five times in Parshas Noach and Lech Lecha, and every time it's ahalo with a hey. V'yisgal besoch oholo. Also with a hey. What romantic drash you're going to give there? Right? And the word oholo appears three or four more times in Lechler. Every time it's oholo with a hey. Alright, like I said, drash is darshaned. That whenever Avraham went anywhere with Sarah, he always did for her first. Okay, it's a good idea anyway to always do for the person you're with first. Okay. So here is the he takes her into a famine, into a war zone, and he recognizes her beauty as a reason to take some action. Right? And we're not told just if you're here for the first time, this class is in couples and Tanakh, so that is what we're doing. What was, this is a question three times in Sefer Bereishis. What do the women think when they're traveling and their husbands think it's a good idea to say we're brother and sister? Right? So, you know, the obvious question is, okay, so, her danger is the same. Why don't you do the chivalrous thing, say you're married, make it more likely that he won't do something, right? Because, you know, monarchies don't, as much as they like to do whatever they want to do, but even in the ancient world, there was sort of a taboo against taking right in front of the husband,
Actually, what he said is that in these cultures, they would have less problem killing the husband.
That's what Dr. Sidorsky just said, and he knows this because there was such a practice. In other words,
Genghis Khan has more DNA in the world today than anybody else because he killed the men in the cities he conquered and inseminated all the wives.
Oh my goodness! Wow. Okay. Hey, all right. So, and this was 3,000 plus years ago. So, this is I would just tell you, there's a good drash of the Kli Yakar, where it says that Hashem struck Paro al dvar Sarai Yeshus Avram. He struck Paro al dvar Sarai Yeshus Avram. So Rashi notices the idiom al-dvar. It's an idiomatic phrase in Hebrew. It means on the matter of Sarah. Or to make matters more easier in English, just say because of Sarah. Paro was stricken because of Sarah. But then the way Rashi works in this Perush al Torah, the word al-dvar Sarah could have just as well been, give me some good Hebrew words, ba'avur Sarah, odot Sarah, bishvil Sarah, right? Just is fine. No one would have noticed anything unusual. Odot sorry, bishvil sorry. It's more for a little sprite in a cup. So I have cups here. So so Rashi says that Paro was stricken by the word of Sarah. The Kli Yakar finds fault with this kind of perush. But he still wants to explain why does it say al dvar? Thanks so much. And he says that why does it have to repeat al dvar Sarai Eishes Avram? Just say al dvar Sarai. I know they're married. So this is what the Kli Yakar says was likely to happen, right? She was taken in. She couldn't say anything on the outside because her husband said, listen, say you're my sister. She wasn't going to defy that. So she went into Paro's chambers saying, he's my brother. Which, by the way, is not far from Pshat. Avram and Lot are uncle and nephew, and he calls Lot my brother. Avram and Sarah are uncle and niece, so he can call his niece his sister. It's his brother's daughter. Right? Okay? So if my brother's son can be my brother, because, Banim Kibanim, right? So Terach's grandson could be the same as Terach's son. Got it? Terach's grandson is Lot. So Terach's son is Avram. So Avram and Lot are brothers. Right? But parenthetically, I know I'm getting off on a tangent of a tangent. This may explain why Rashi says that Lot is to be praised for not informing Paro that Avram and Sarah were really brother and were really husband and wife, in addition to being brother and sister, let's say. In other words, Lot is to be praised for not informing on Avraham. So don't you have an obvious moral question on Rashi writing such a thing? Why does someone deserve to be praised for not doing something whereby if the person had done it, it would have been a despicable, disgusting thing? We only shouldn't be praised for not doing the despicable.
Which was probably common.
But still. Why should Lot be praised for not informing? Informing would have been disgusting after all Avram is doing for you. So here's the answer. Avram and Sarah are Lot and Sarah are brother and sister. Yes, if Sarah is Yiska, Sarah means princess in Hebrew, Yiska means princess in Aramaic. They're from Aram. So Chazal took the liberty and said Yiska is Sarah. Yiska's father is Haran. Mm-hmm. Lot's father is Haran. That would make Sarah and Lot brother and sister. Mm-hmm. So Lot is watching in Egypt as Avraham is getting heaped all this wealth. Because she's Sarah's brother, right? Because Sarah is his sister, right? Lot does have some incentive to say, wait a second, I am the brother. He's a fake brother. I'm the real brother. So there, you see, once there's a strong impetus for him to inform this way, then all right, you get credit for that. For not informing. Fair enough. Okay.
But that's it also with Lot. They also got rich.
That's it. That's precisely it. Because he didn't inform. That's what Rashi says then. So, okay, Lot, you know what? You feel that Avram is getting rich for being the fake brother. Okay, you're going to get rich too. You are the brother. Fine. So Sarah is taken in. She can't stay on the outside and to contradict her husband. But once she gets on the inside... Just tell me, just Derech Eretz, what do you think happens? Paro is making a move on her. What does she do? Now you see why it says, Al Devar Sarai, Eishes Avram. She tells him at that point, listen, Paro, whatever my husband said, whatever Avram said, that's my husband. She started to indicate to him that I'm a married woman. Right? And Paro, so this is, you see, the Kliyokar is such a moralist. His paper, she says, I don't believe that Paro deserves to be punished at this point for making the move on Sarah. It's true, even if Paro does kill men and take their wives, in this case, there's no married man. As far as he knows, this is a brother and a sister. So I invited the sister into my home. What single woman doesn't enjoy the company of a monarch, right? So, but when she says, I'm really a married woman, so the Kliyokar, of course, the nature of the Kliyokar is to make this up, but okay. He says that Paro said, I don't believe you. That your brother said that you're brother and sister. He goes, well, when we travel, that's usually what we do, but I'm really a married woman. And Paro continued, and then Hashem says, okay. Not Vaidna Gashem Al Devar Sarai, where Rashi says, now hit him now! Bang! Hit him again! Bang! You know, Al Devar Sarai, you get it? By the word of Sarai, Paro was stricken. Oh, he was stricken because he didn't pay attention to the Devar Sarai that she's Eishes Avram. Get it? Okay? So, in their travels, look, you know, she realizes, did she like the all the excitement. Look, she is every reason to believe and accept that she feels she's part of something big. But of course, there's nothing going on. We're married quite a while, and we don't have children, right? So she suggests with great selflessness. She's willing to give up her place in the history of this great nation for the sake of my husband. And this is where she gives over Hagar. Now, you've heard of the Nuzi tablets, Dr. Sidorsky? Have you ever heard of them? The Nuzi tablets? I found these really very descriptive tablets of Sumerian law. And there are elaborate, many, many chapters, elaborate description of what they do in Sumeria if a couple is married for a number of years without children. Different rules depending on their age, depending on how long they're married. And the general principle is as follows. The woman of the home, the mistress of the home, the queen of the home, chooses a woman at her behest who is very loyal to her, who she knows will only serve her. She chooses this woman to have the schus of being with her husband, who will father a child with her. The woman will bear the child and give up the child to the mistress of the house, to raise and to have as her own.
It's kind of like today with...
Surrogate motherhood. And when Sarah says, V'ibonemimena, she says, Ulai ibonemimena. Rachel says, V'ibonemimena, because Yaakov already had children with someone else. As far as Sarah's concerned, she might be able to have children with another man. All right, but I know that's not the case because God promised you to be a great nation. He didn't say anything about me. We'll get to that in a minute. So Sarah is engaging in just such a tradition.
Hold on a second. Can you force God's hand if I sustain with Sarah? The promise has to be true.
Let me ask this question. God promised David HaMelech, right, when he was a lad, that he will be one day king of Israel. In between that promise and the realization of the promise, whether it's 2 years or 20 years or 30, the different mafarshim have a widely different position about how long transpired. But one thing is for sure, for a good 10 chapters of Shmuel Aleph, David is in grave, grave danger at the hands of Shaul. Why didn't David just say to Shaul, listen, big boy, make my day. You can't kill me, because I'm going to be king one day. Right? Why didn't you do that? I'm just going to be king. Had David done that, he would have been killed, and there wouldn't be a Shmuel Aleph, and someone else would be the first king of the Yehuda dynasty. Just because God promises this doesn't mean that you still have to act out. I can say this, and Hashem promises Yirmiyahu, I'll be with you, they will try to kill you, they won't succeed. There are some times where they would have succeeded if Yirmiyahu had not done something unconventional.
I feel like we as a reader know also that when God makes a promise for good, he always keeps it, but I don't think that they knew that. The righteous are always afraid.
Yaakov is always afraid. Shemi Ramachet. Okay, clear enough. But the Rambam's Hakdama to the Mishnah Torah discusses this. But let's just get back to the point. All the promises notwithstanding, the biblical character doesn't usually force God's hand that way. Although, of course, it's probably thinking of the Gemara in Brachos where Chana tries to force God's hand. Remember about becoming an Isha Sota. The Gemara says. Excuse me if I don't elaborate on that. That part of the Agada.
That's a midrash.
It's a midrash. Yes. Okay. But let's get back to our point. Is that Sarah engages in precisely this convention, and Ibn Ezra. I'm not sure if Ibn Ezra was aware of the Nutzi tablets. I'm quite sure he was not. But he explains v'ibonemi mena to mean I will take her son. You get it? Not from Ibanem meaning vinyan, but Ibanem, I'll be sonned by her. You get it? So even it's mistama, it's some kind of pun between, and Rashi makes a point also that's the word binyan.
That's the same as today with the surrogate, right?
Okay, fine. Okay, so you keep the child, and then the Nutzi tablets have this amazing condition. If there's a falling out between the women, then the slave woman shall be given her freedom,
and the child stays.
And the child stays with the mother, with the birth mother, but the
adopted
mother, and she's given her freedom. So I think what's happening at the end, later in the story, was interesting. Is that a lot of Mefarshim, the Radak, Ramban, find great fault with Sarah's behavior in Perek Tetzayin, Parshas Lech Lecha, and Avraham too, by letting Sarah afflict Hagar. In fact, Ramban says all the problems we have with the Muslims to this day is because of what Sarah did with Hagar. right? It's the Hajj, the Jaira is for Hagar. They're imitating Hagar's flight from Sarah. So that is, but interesting is that Ramban and Radak do not find fault with what Sarah does in Perek Chaf Aleph, in Parshas Vayera, when they cast out Hagar and Yishmael. Because according to the Nutzi tablets, Sarah is very kind with Hagar in that story, because
she lets
Hagar take the child. Now, of course, she doesn't need the child. She has her own by now, but still. And I would like to suggest, and Ibn Ezra does this a lot, even Shaddal does this, so I'm going to do it, is to explain a biblical root, in this case, Goresh, in light of its rabbinic usage. Hebrew has not gone through such a metamorphosis that we shouldn't be able to do this. Right? I wouldn't do it in English. Beowulf's English and Shakespeare's English has evolved very much in the last 1,000 years. Right? But Hebrew did not, because Hebrew is always spoken and always used. So when Sarah says, Goresh es ha'amahazos, right? What word do you hear in English? Goresh.
Send away.
Banish. Send away, right? But Goresh in biblical Hebrew, yes, means to divorce, and or even an Eved or Shifcha gets a Shtar Gerushin. Girush is also to free. The woman is being freed from her husband. Right? Goresh in rabbinic Hebrew has a connotation of setting free. That is what Sarah is telling Avram to do. Set her free and let her have her child. I don't want the child. She's behaving like a tzaddikus compared to the law that they were most probably familiar with. So, and Hagar does ask for it. The way Hagar behaves, just enough is one pasuk. Vatekal gvir tov be'eineha is enough for a woman maybe married 30 or 40 years and barren for so long to have someone, this little newcomer here, who becomes pregnant, and now all of a sudden she's the mistress of the house. So that was too much for Sarah to bear. She's still held responsible by Ramban and Radak and other Meforshim, because Sarah, this was your idea after all. But she expresses her anger with Abraham for allowing Hagar to do this. And then Abraham allows Sarah to do it. He says, she's your shivcha, do what you want. Where's the Abraham we know in Vayera, who intercedes, who steps in, who speaks up? That's the metamorphosis in Abraham's life, but that's a different kind of shir. We've done that before. How Abraham grows from Lech Lecha to Vayera. Right?
Why is she mad at Abraham?
So she says, Chamosi Olecha, because you're letting her make light of me. But she says, remember what Rashi says on that? Because back when you complained to God about how it seems in your eyes that it's impossible that God's promises will come true, tell me the quote in chapter 15. Three words. Anochi Olech Ariri. Anochi holeich ariri. God, tell me a great nation, but I'm childless. Right? So, what did God answer that? Don't say you're childless, Avraham. You will have a child. Now, had Avraham, instead of saying Anochi holeich ariri, had he said Anachnu holchim aririm, but God, what good is it? Sarah and I have no children. That one sentence could have changed our history. Because God would have said, not, Avram, don't say, Anochi Olech Ariri, you will have to. Instead, God would have responded, I'm just telling you what some of the Rishonim say. Then God would have responded, it's a little chutzpahdik for a human being to think of what God would have done. But all right, we're studiers of Torah, and
In fairness to Sarah, though, the thing that angers her is Vayitzachek Ishmael at Yitzchak.
Yes, that's in Vayera, and there all of the detractors in Lech Lecha, they speak that Sarah is correct. He deserves to leave. He should leave with her. And that's, by the way, I think this hit me this year for the first time. that when Rashi says Shema Bekola, it means Shema Beruach HaKodesh Sheba, I understand, because the pasuk could have said Shema Lo, listen to her. What does the Torah have to say? Listen to her voice. If not for the fact that that voice is the voice of prophecy. She knows better than you, Avraham. You feel that Yitzchak can be a good influence on Yishmael. She thinks Yishmael is going to be a bad influence on Yitzchak. She's more correct. Now, who knows how history could have been different if Yishmael stayed with Avraham and was raised in Avraham's circle? We'll never know. But Sarah is told by Hashem tells Avram, Shema Bekola, that's enough for us. It's enough for us. I'm not going to second guess God. God said, listen to her. That's good advice if you were here this past Shabbos when I spoke about the chosen. It's good advice for any married man. Shema Bekola to the Ruach HaKodesh Shabbat. Because otherwise, just pedagogically, remember the story where the Chazon Ish was once asked by a principal in the early 50s in the yeshiva someplace. He said, I have 200 Talmidim. They're all the top Talmidim, great Talmidim, but I have two troublemakers. I'm afraid they're a bad influence on some of the other boys. I want to just kick them out. Do I have a psak halacha from you that I can kick those two and let them go to another school? So the Chazon Ish answered, I don't understand you. You have 200 students. 198 don't need you. And the two that need you, those are the two you want to get rid of? Right? So, okay, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say this hunky-dory, it's so nice, yeah, blah, blah, blah. But the point is that to banish, right? Okay, you have to know.
Unbearable, absolutely.
I understand. So the only reason why it was justified to banish Yishmael was because Shema Bekolah. Ruach HaKodesh Shabbat. Because if it's not Ruach HaKodesh and it's just a question, should we keep him? Of course you should keep him. Look, obviously there's a threshold that can be crossed where you have to say, yeah, I can't, you can't stay here anymore, you're killing our kids. You know? Right? But you know what I'm saying. So it's because it's Ruach HaKodesh Shabbat. Not an objective thing, it's just that the criteria is that she's speaking prophetically. For the future, Yitzchak cannot be raised with Yishmael. Simple. So Sarah does get the way there. And that's why, as Dr. Zdarsky just said, that she is, in all fairness to Sarah, she's treated by all these Mephoshim who find fault with her back in Lech Lecha. They say, yes, she's 100% right. And the proof of the pudding is, Hashem says, Shema Bekola. Hashem doesn't say anything like that back in Perek Tzayin. And as I said before, in light of what I just referred to in the Nutzi tablets, she is acting really with more grace than is required by convention at that time. Okay? So, by allowing
the name of those tablets?
Nutzi, N-U-Z-Y. Nutzi tablets. Yes.
It's in Iran.
According to Midrash, when does Ishmael come back for the Akedah? I mean, right? He's one of the Na'arim?
Yeah. It's a good question.
Okay. And he certainly does come back for Avram's burial.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's.
Well, that goes.
Let's see. I mean, that, no matter how you slice it, the darshan that says that the two Na'arim are Eliezer and Yishmael, this is after the story before he's banished, and where is he? So, all right, it maybe have something to do with why Avram and Sarah aren't in the same place. There's something going on between.
Also, right there's an address that says, like, Avram would send messages to Hagar and Ishmael.
Yes, that he kept in touch, and he sent them some gifts.
Okay.
Okay, so I did find one parish, again, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. You familiar with Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid? There's a little controversy involved in the first edition that came out in the mid-70s. It was a man named Yitzchak Langa, who... he was visiting, I think it was Amsterdam, and he showed his manuscript to the chief rabbi of Amsterdam, and the chief rabbi didn't like it, and he wrote to Rav Moshe Feinstein about it. It's a bit of a controversy. Suffice it to say that Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid has some very surprising commentaries. And he writes at the end of Parshas Vayera that Sarah was starting to have enough already. Right? Now this reaction may have something to do with what exactly was the Akedah. Was the Akedah dreamed up by Avraham? Right? There's you know, the Rambam seems to be saying in the Mor Nebuchim that the Akedah was a dream. Right? Now, there could be two parts of this. The command was a dream, and since Avram, this is a Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Pei Tes that discusses, how does a Navi know what's a real dream and what's just a dream? Do you ever have a dream that something, a premonition comes to you in a dream and you wonder, was this prophecy? Gemara says every dream is 1/60th prophecy, right? So there's just a lot of shtus in dreams. But maybe a dream is trying to tell you something. How do you say I dreamed in Yiddish? This is mir gecholamt. It means the dream came to me, right? Chalom chalamti, right? So we don't say in English, we say I dreamed, I dreamt. We have a, but in the
Yiddish, you say in Hebrew.
This is mir gecholamt, right? A dream came to me, right? So that Sarah is just saying, you know, Avram, this is too much. You're becoming a zealot, right? So he even said, and I've seen this in some contemporary writings, and I don't love it, but I just, at least there's a Rishon that says that Sarah said, I've had it, I have it enough. And she went to Hebron, right? Okay. What exactly? Look, he's also the one who says that she's punished with the Akedah because she atichachesh. Wow. That's really, are you familiar with it? If Rabbi Lachosid is not something that I should quote so often,
it looks as she was punished. It looks like okay. That. Some try to get out.
I find that our three patriarchs lived these long lives, 180 years, 175 years, even Yaakov, 147 years, and the women die. You know, Sarah dies; her son doesn't take part in the funeral. It seems, right? She doesn't die with him around her bed, right? I don't know that Yitzchok was, and Chazal connect her death to the Akedah, so he certainly wasn't around her at the time, according to this. As opposed to Aaron, who dies, and his two sons are around him, and they bury him, and they make up. And the same for Yitzchak, with Yaakov and Esav. And Yaakov dies with all his sons around his bed, and they close his eyes. And Rachel, Nebuch along the way. Leah, we don't even know about. Rivka, the Tanakh doesn't even tell us about Rivka's death. It says that her nursemaid died, and that people didn't want to know when she died. I mean, it was...
It's really true.
Just suddenly, yeah. Okay. So let's close up this discussion of what's happening with Sarah. So she says that Avram, had you said Anachnu Hochim Aririm, then when God told you, don't say you and Sarah are childless. You and Sarah will have a child. Right, which ultimately we don't know later, in retrospect, came true. Then when Sarah would have suggested to Avram, listen, Avram, Bona El Shif Chasi, it's not working with you and me. Right? So Avram would have said, Sarah, I wasn't going to tell you this because, you know, this is insider information, but in Perek Tes Vav, it says that we're going to have children. Right? Okay? So, look, when Hashem does tell him in Perek Yitzayim, he doesn't come and tell her. How do we know? She laughs when she hears it behind the curtain. Why didn't she know? Avram was told already before the bris that your wife is going to have a child. How did these two communicate? All right, for this I have an answer. Ramban says Yitochein, that since Hashem told him give yourself a bris, right? So Avram didn't want to put that off. He just did it immediately. And, you know, he's not gonna tell her, you know, we're going to have a child. First, let me get healed a little bit, you know, then we'll get things working, you know. So, right? So that is not familiar with any Mephoshim that say that Sarah had already conceived before that birth. No, that's the whole point. Sarah was to conceive Yitzchak with a man who was a gemalt, who had a bris. You get it?
Say that again.
Sarah was to conceive Yitzchak with Avraham circumcised. Right? You understand? Okay. So that's her anger. Hamasi Olecha. Rashi writes that my anger is with you, not of what she's doing now. I know this, that's my doing. I should have anticipated that this might happen. But my anger with you is that this didn't have to happen at all. Right? Look, the reader can see the pain of Rachel and Sarah and Rachel and Leah and the pain of Chana and Chana's story. You see, the men don't seem to get it in all these stories, but the pain is there. And Sarah lashes out at Avraham here. And says, if you expect me to be with you in this whole big this big program of ours, you know, where is why didn't you include me in the plan? Okay, and look, we're the Ramban is correct. We are willy nilly we're suffering for this whole story, right? And that ends Parshas Vayera. So in Vayera, Avraham demonstrates now, he goes through a great growth. He has dealings with a foreign king, Sodom, and banishing Hagar. In Vayera, they happen they just sort of happen to Avraham. He lets them happen. The events take place and they come and go. In Vayera, the events require Avraham's intercession. He intercedes for Sodom. He intercedes for the foreign king. He doesn't pray for Paro in Parshas Lech Lecha, but he does pray for Avimelech in Parshas Vayera. Right? Remember, right? Mm-hmm. And he does try to intercede with Yishmael. He says, Lu Yishmael Yichel Lefanecha. He complains about his Vayera b'nei Avram, right? In Lech Lecha, he says, oh, good, fine, do what you want, sure, Sarah, fine. You want to do this? Okay, good, do this. You want to do that? Okay, do that. We'll kick her out? Okay, kick her out. Avram is not the Avram we know that intercedes and prays and gets involved. After all, what is a Navi? Right? He'll pray for you, Avimelech ki Navihu. This, I think we ended last class with this. So Navi is from the word Niv. Very Niv Sfasayim. Right? There are better words for prophet in Tanakh. Chose or Ro'e. Right?
Seer.
Seer. Navi is someone who speaks. Nasan HaNavi is the one who gives the speeches.
What is Satarosh? Is lit.
Niv is an expression.
Expression.
Yeah.
Expression.
It manifests in words like Od Yinuvun V'seva, Tnuva, you know. That's... All right, so also, you know, you see different words in Tanakh bouncing back from one of these to another, like sicha and siach hasodeh. These are expressions that flower out of the mouth is a nevuah. Okay, so Avram is a navi. Hashem tells Avimelech, and that's why he's going to pray for you. Because that's what the Navi does. Rashi simplifies it and says, since he knows you didn't touch his wife, he's going to pray for you. But if he thought you touched her, you're finished. But he knows you didn't touch her, because you didn't. And he's a Navi. Right? Okay, so that's where Avraham grows. And Nebuch, does Avraham, I mean, Sarah just dies suddenly on us. Right? And when Avraham attends the funeral, Yitzchak is not there, and the funeral starts off Vayavo Avraham Lispod Besar Vivkosa. Right? Why did it say Vayavo? It should say, give me the Hebrew. It should say Vayispod Avraham Lisara Vayivkosa. Why Vayavo Avraham? Right? So the Medrash asks what's the obvious question for the reader. Mehechan Ba? Where was he coming from? So the obvious answer to that would be Beersheba. Beersheba is how far is it from Hebron, Glenn?
Today,
it's a bus ride. I mean,
it's at least 20 miles. 20,
okay, so the camel.
Let's say 30 miles.
Not the day.
Oh, no. Then it's several days.
On a camel, it could be. All right. Anyway.
No, that's much more like 2 days.
They don't have the roads like we have today. So Vayavo could be, you know, Vayavo means he went from where he was in Beersheba. But Chazal say no, Vayavo, he went from two things. What's amazing is if you do the Cheshbon, Terach dies this year.
Okay.
Terach and Sarah die in the same year. Just the Cheshbon.
Sarah?
Yeah, because just figure out when Terach was born, how old he was, when Avram was old, and how many years he lived after him. So one Medrash says he went from Terach's funeral to Sarah's funeral. Right? And that's why he went to Be'er Sheva. Another Medrash says that he went from the Arkadia. Now, you don't go from Har HaMoriah to Be'er Sheva on your way to Hebron. Everybody knows that, right? Maybe you can go to Hebron on your way to Be'er Sheva, but not the opposite, right? These are the two opinions, that he went from Har HaMoriah or from his father's funeral. What's interesting, I have a sefer in my office. It's the most amazing thing. It's called Be'er Stumot Barashi. It is such a crazy word. It mamish darshins what Rashi says as if the Rashi is the biblical text itself. So Rashi gives these two opinions, that he went from Terach's funeral or from the Akedah. So it says, well, that's hinted in the pasuk. You see, Vayavo Avraham, right? So spell those two words backwards. For Avraham is Mehar Ba. And Vayavo is Aviv. So Vayavo Avraham is giving a hint to the two possible what places he came from. But one thing is clear, he's coming from someplace. Now, I think I would do that with the word Vayavo. I don't think we always need to do this, like Vayelech Ish mi Beis Levi Vayikachas Bas Levi. You can ask the same question, Meheichon Ba, Meheichon Halach, Bach Batas Bito, remember those Midrashim, right? So I'm not sure if it's always worthwhile to ask, because the Ramban, as I think, has the best shot. Vayelech is Loshen's Rizus. He went and did it. Will you go and do your homework already? Where do you want me to go? Right? No. It's a Loshen's Rizus. Gird your loins and go and do it. Right? So let's go and learn. Right? Toshma. What do you think Toshma? Boshma. Right? Come and listen. So that doesn't mean come meaning literally take a walk and come here. So Vayavo Avraham, I don't know.
So why is it Vayelech?
No, I think it is worthwhile to say that he came from someplace here in this instance. I think it is.
Well, if you also think psychologically, he had this tremendous issue. I want to get away from that kind of thing.
I think the test. We have to. This is a different kind of shear, but we have to see what the test was. Why didn't Avram tell Sarah about it? Did he tell Sarah about the way it was going? You know, you're going to be gone for 3 days. Surely, you know, you're going to wake up in the morning and try to sneak away with your wife, with your wife's whole life, right? Does she ever see him again? Right, I'm of the opinion that there were a good 25 years between the Akedah and her death. That's my opinion. It's the opinion of Rashbam and Ibn Ezra. Wow. He was a kid. He was not 37 at the time. Right? It wasn't like that happened and then she died. Okay. All right. So we're not finished with Avram and Sarah. I would like to discuss some of the how Vayera moves into Chayei Sarah with the birth of Rivka, but we're still going to be on Avram and Sarah. And there's not a whole lot to talk about with Rivka and Yitzchak. Except that I can imagine, this is how I'll end this year, that when Avraham's servant was looking at this girl agape, he was saying, what a great daughter-in-law this girl will make for Avraham. I don't think she said what a great wife she'll make for Avraham, but she's just like Avraham. Vayimaher, vatimaher. Vayaratz, vatoratz. Look at the way Avram is described in the beginning of Vayera, and look at what she's doing in the beginning of Perikov Dalit and Chayei Sarah, and you'll see she's just like Avram. And she's so much like Avram, but so much not like Yitzchak. But that's okay, Yitzchak is also not like Avram.
You're saying Rivka.
Rivka, yes.
Yeah.
The perfect match for Avram. But Avram's married already. Okay, we'll continue with Mitzvah next week.